Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Scott Ritter, and Scott and I are going to talk about the infrastructure bill. So, Scott, you know, there's been a lot of talk on the TV and stuff about bill, and, you know, it's debated and it's talked about. But and there's a lot of money involved, granted. But when it comes to military spending, the military-industrial complex, I mean, you had told me when I called you that there is a there's debate amongst the committees, but it's not known to the public. Can you explain why people are not privy to the debate for the military-industrial complex and why the infrastructure bill is so controversial?
Well, first of all, when we talk about the military and defense spending, the House of Representatives in Congress, you know, has the power of the purse. So, the military doesn't get any money that it doesn't ask Congress for, and then Congress will debate the, the request and authorize the expenditure of these funds. The public can be privy. I mean, if you're addicted to C-SPAN or 1, 2, and 3, depending on which channel it is and what priorities afford at the time, you can actually watch all of the open testimony. Provided by the various generals and assistant secretaries and secretaries and so on and so forth. Even the heads of civilian companies, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and others, testify in support of various programs and requests for money. It's and this is the important thing. I mean, as big as the Defense Department's budget is, there isn't an aspect of it that isn't subjected to full and detailed scrutiny by Congress. Even the classified portions, what we call special access programs, the black budget, where for the average American, all we see is, for instance, $60 billion authorized for research and development, but we don't know what that is. Congress does. The members of Congress on these committees are read into these programs. They understand that, you know, we might have a B-21 stealth bomber follow-on program taking place. We might have certain advanced, concepts when it comes to missile defense that are being tested and developed that are top secret. We don't want the public to know about or our enemy to know about. But Congress knows. They debate this. And that's the difference. Every aspect of the Defense Department spending is debated by Congress, considered by Congress, and approved by Congress through the committee process. Compare and contrast that with what's going on with the with this infrastructure bill, and what we have is a 2,000 some odd page document that nobody has read. No committee has considered this. It has been put together by a bunch of politicians in the back corner and then presented as a take it or leave it proposition. And by avoiding the committee process, and given the fact that we have Congress right now that is so evenly divided, where only a handful of votes can determine the fate of a given bill, we have a whole bunch of individuals now who believe they have the ultimate power over what goes in this bill. And so we see, Senator Manchin, for instance, West Virginia, the senator from Arizona, are both, playing God, so to speak, about what's in this bill and what's not in this bill. And we also see, a bunch of the more progressive members of Congress doing the same thing, holding the bill hostage to provisions that they want. And so, this bill doesn't, this bill is never considered as it's, in its entirety, 2,000 pages. It's considered in small little segments of pet projects of these various congressmen and senators who, you know, have, you know, the ability to make or break the bill when it comes up to vote. So there's a huge difference between the way defense spending is considered by Congress and how this infrastructure spending is to be considered. And also understand there's a huge difference in price tag, too. You know, as big as our defense budget is, $780 billion, the infrastructure bill right now is over $3 trillion. So we're talking about $3 trillion, and nobody knows what's in that bill. Nobody has read that bill. Not a single senator, not a single member of Congress has read that bill from start to finish. They're only concerned about their little thin slice of the pie. And I think that's what a lot of people have a problem with, that this isn't an infrastructure bill designed to help the country so much as it is a massive bit of pork spending designed to improve the, you know, political fortunes of people who have slid their pet projects in this so they can look good at home.
So do you said the senators and congresspeople don't really know what's in the bill. Does Biden know what's in the bill?
No. No one knows what's in the totality of the bill. There might be some staffer somewhere that has put this together, but this is a bill that's literally, it's like the Patriot Act after 9/11. Prior to 9/11, we had various members of Congress sliding in, you know, trying to get approved pet security projects that were all rejected, primarily because of the questionable constitutionality of the provision. Things about eavesdropping and all this were rejected by Congress and slid, removed from bills. And so we had a whole stack of bills that gave, the executive branch police state-like authority that had been rejected in the past. And after 9/11, they were all brought together, stapled up, and called the Patriot Act. Nobody sat down and wrote the Patriot Act. It wasn't something that was designed from press. Somebody wrote a cover letter and slapped that cover letter on a whole bunch of failed legislation that was unable to get passed prior to 9/11, but because of the fear that was promulgated after 9/11, this thing was passed without a single person reading it from top to bottom. There's stuff in there that nobody knows about except the various agencies that are now empowered to violate the constitutional rights of Americans. This infrastructure bill, its direct parallel is the Patriot Act. This is called the Rebuild America Act or something like American Jobs Act. It's not about American jobs. It's pork barrel spending, just like the Patriot Act wasn't about patriotism. It was about violating the constitutional rights of Americans in the name of national security.
Wow. So that's pretty, interesting. So when I mentioned to you, when I called you to do this interview, and we talked about the defense budget, and you said it's on C-SPAN. Okay, that's fine, but people work, people have busy lives. They don't have time to sit in front of the TV and watch C-SPAN all day to find out what the military budget is. So for those people that are leading busy lives but want to know about it, how can they do so?
The transcripts are available. People, Google, search engines are doing it. But again, it takes time. The bottom line is it's going to take time for people to hunt this down. It's going to take time for people to read it. A testimony by the general can take all day, which means if you want to know what the general's saying, you got to spend a whole day watching what this does. You're right. I mean, it's very difficult being a good citizen. It's not just defense spending. It's not just the infrastructure. It's everything, health care, policing, the environment, the air quality, all of these decisions that are made by Congress acting on our behalf are considered by Congress in open session, the vast majority of them. But, Congress does this full time. Congress has committees that are meeting nonstop. This is just an impossible amount of data for the average American to absorb and consider. You know, there are policy experts whose full-time job it is to monitor this, and they don't even get it right. And so imagine the person that's working, you know, an 8-hour-plus day, at a full-time job, coming home and having to care for his or her family, pay the bills, clean the house, mow the lawn, all the things that life throws at you, trying to have a good time, maybe, quality life, going on a hike or working out. How much time is left at the end of the day for them to allocate to, following these tasks? Not very much. That's why Americans are prisoner to, media organizations that do track this and then, package it either in a written form or, through televised news programs. And so that's where Americans get their news. That's how they learn things. They don't do it by, going straight to the source, because they don't have time to do that. They get it in a very concise fashion that's been run through a number of filters, filters that have a lot of ideological bias thrown in there. So, we can have a hearing in Congress about, issue X, and we can have Fox News cover it, and we can have CNN cover it. And if you watch both of those, you'd think there was two completely different hearings, given the priorities that they put on the information that's put out there. And, and so now that means that, Americans have to watch two news programs and then decide for themselves which one they're going to believe. It's an impossible task. Being a good citizen is an impossible job nowadays.
So, we both agree that it takes a lot of time to familiarize yourself what's going on with Congress. But if you pick up the paper, like you and I, our local paper is the Times Union, whether you talk about the Times Union, any local paper across the country, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, they don't seem to cover it. I mean, they don't have articles saying, today in Congress, such and such a committee met, and these were the results, correct? So if they're not covering it, then it's up to the average citizen to spend a lot of their time, which they might not have, finding out what's going on. Would that be an accurate statement?
It's a very accurate statement. Also note that when they do cover it, the coverage is often incomplete. You'd be surprised how many organizations like the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal no longer, they've suffered from a changing economics in terms of how media is presented, and they've had to cut their budgets. They used to have reporters who were dedicated, reporters who would watch this. Now they have editors who receive stringer reports from freelancers or from news services. And so even when you read the New York Times, you're probably going to read the same story that's appearing in the Los Angeles Times and the Washington Post, because it comes from the same single source. So gone is the day of, the beat reporter who was an expert in affairs. There was a time when you could trust the media because, they had people like Seymour Hersh, an investigative journalist, who would spend days, weeks, months pursuing a story, checking the facts, and then writing it. So when you read it, this was quality work. This was quality research. This was quality editing. You learned something valuable here. Those reporters don't exist anymore. And so all you're getting is distilled information. So even when they do cover it, the coverage is insufficient.
So we're actually talking about two specific issues today. And I want to get back to the infrastructure bill. And the infrastructure bill is highlighting the schism between the progressives and the moderates in Congress. What do you think that's going to lead?
Well, I think it's going to lead to stalemate, because there's first of all, when we say infrastructure, we don't have an accepted definition of what infrastructure constitutes. Traditionally, infrastructure has been roads, bridges, airports, rail lines, the framework around which a nation is built. But now, progressives have said, no, infrastructure also includes daycare. Infrastructure includes healthcare. Infrastructure includes education. And they've expanded the definition. So when we say an infrastructure bill, we oftentimes have people talking past each other because they're using the same words, but the words have different meanings. And so, that's a problem. And two is, about expectations. I think, there's certain people that think that, providing, daycare support is more important than rebuilding bridges. There's people that think that, a free education is more important to national security than the defense budget. So there's these priorities. Now, normally when people hold such extreme, this is the benefit of having the these bills considered through the committee process, because in the committee process, you'll have one or two members that put out their extreme positions, but they're voted down by the committee, who say no, we have to reach compromise, we have to reach consensus, so these extreme positions will be eliminated. We're going to agree on a core proposition. We're going to put it forward, and because they've already called out the extreme positions, when it goes before the main body, these bills tend to get passed into law. But in something like this infrastructure bill, well, it's been denied the committee process. These extremists now have the power to determine the fate of the whole bill. And so their vision, their unique perspective on what's important and what's not important stops being, inconsequential extremism that's eliminated the committee process. It becomes the heart of the debate. We're not talking about, the real infrastructure issues here. We're talking about, pet projects of people, which are important in their own right, but, should not be allowed to define the infrastructure bill in its totality.
It seems as though when you turn on the news, it's cinema and mansion versus all the rest. Is that accurate or no?
Well, it is, especially in the Senate right now, where we have, basically a 49-51 split. You lose two Democrat senators, and Kamala Harris no longer has the vote. It's against it. So Manchin and Sinema know that they have the power, that if either one of them decides not to vote Democrat, the bill is not going to pass. So, given the fact that they are the swing vote, they're not stupid. They're not, they're politicians who understand that this is their moment to put into a bill their vision of how things work. These are people who are not worried about the big picture. These are people worried about, local politics. There's that saying that all politics are local, and that's mm-hmm. true. And so Manchin and Sinema are living manifestations of that reality. The local politics of Arizona and the local politics of West Virginia are now determining a national infrastructure bill.
And both Sinema's district and Manchin's district, is it safe to say they're both pretty conservative?
Well, yes. I mean, they're not. They don't have districts. They're senators when
they
come
right,
from
they have
states. But even though Sinema is a Democrat, she was elected by a state that has a history of electing conservative Democrats and conservative Republicans. And Manchin is Democrat in name only. West Virginia is a blue collar state that embodies many of the principles that are espoused by the Republican Party. So even though Manchin's a Democrat, he might as well be Republican in terms of the people he represents and how he represents them.
Okay. So what do you envision over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I don't see this thing passing this week. I mean, Pelosi has tried to bring it up for a vote today, and that's failed. She doesn't have the votes. And she's not going to have the votes, not for some time now. There's going to have to be significant culling of this bill for it to pass. Hard choices are going to have to be made, because understand this, for every, you know, let's say you want to keep something that Manchin supports in, Pelosi's already brought the price of the bill, I think, from $3.5 trillion. She said, look, I have a compromise solution of $2.1 trillion. Manchin says he won't support anything over $1.8 trillion. All right, but now if you're at $2.1, that means that there's $1.4 trillion worth of projects that no longer are being funded. Whose pet projects were those? and who might now step up and suddenly decide to assume the same posture as Manchin, become a swing vote to say, no. If you want my vote now, you got to put my project back in there. And that's the problem with such a, tightly balanced Senate and House is, any individual who now stands up and makes an issue out of their pet project, becomes a player that has to be dealt with. So I just see, if this is like whack-a-mole for every issue that Nancy Pelosi is able to resolve, five more are gonna pop up, and it's an impossible task. I don't know if Biden's gonna get his this bill put through. I think it's gonna end up being one of the greatest legislative failures of the Biden administration.
So if Biden does not pass, how damaged is his presidency?
Well, his presidency is already teetering on the brink of absolute failure, and if he doesn't get this passed, I mean, this is his signature bill. This is his Build Back Better plan. This is everything. This is his presidency, and if he can't get this passed, his presidency is over in everything but name only. He's just going to become a figurehead, somebody who sits there and is going to be signing off on continuing resolution after continuing resolution that keeps the government, going through the motions, but there won't be any major policy changes. And this will impact everything. This will impact, his pivot to the Pacific, his decision to confront China, his ability to reengage with Europe. All of this is impacted by this failure. He'll become a failed president who is not respected by anybody. And so when he says this is a priority, people are going to ignore him. It's going to mean that America is going to be treading water for the next 2.5 years until we can elect somebody new.
Just a little while ago, you and I had a discussion about Biden's meeting with Putin. And at that point, you were saying that Putin thought Biden was pretty shrewd. He was on top of his game. But now you seem to say that Biden's almost a failed president.
Well, there's a difference between – remember, Putin was coming in when people were saying that Biden, is stricken by Alzheimer's, that Biden has to take a nap, that Biden can't maintain a coherent conversation. So Putin was responding to that. What he was saying is, hey, the guy I met with, he's there. He's all there. He's not Sleepy Joe. He's the guy. Just because you're all there, though, doesn't mean you have good policies. Doesn't mean you're an effective president. So there's a difference between Putin saying that Biden, appears to have full control of his senses, and the reality that even if you have full control of your senses, Biden's a horrible president. Just because you have full control of your senses doesn't mean your faculties doesn't mean that the Build Back Better plan is a good plan. It's not. It's a horrible plan. It's a huge amount of money that people are struggling to find out not only how they're going to spend it, but what they're spending it on. I mean, this is like me coming to you saying, I need you to mortgage your house and strip your savings and give it to me, and I'm going to buy you something really, really cool. And you go, well, what are you buying? It's really, really cool. It's called the Really, Really Cool Project. And this is my really, really cool plan. And you're like, well, what am I going to get from it? Don't worry about it. I just need all your money, and I'm going to give you something really, really cool. And that's what Biden's doing, the Build Back Better American Jobs Plan. Nobody knows what it is. And that he's asking Americans to basically, go broke to pay for this. And, and once it's done, it's done. Our debt is going to, there's a reason why I have to raise the debt ceiling to make this happen. Our debt is going to go through the roof, and we're never going to pay it off. I mean, you were just teetering towards the brink of inevitable economic collapse. We keep borrowing more and more. Again, you and I can't operate that way. Your listeners can't. You know, at the end of the month, if we don't have enough money, we go into default. If we don't pay our mortgage, the bank comes after our house. If we don't make a car payment, the repo man comes in. You know, there are consequences for our inability to have the means to match, you know, what we desire. The U.S. government doesn't operate that way. We just spend and spend and spend. We want a new missile program? Print money. Make it happen. You want an infrastructure bill? Tell me how much. We'll spend it. We'll raise the debt ceiling. It'd be nice, wouldn't it, at the end of the month, if we didn't have enough money, we just raised the debt ceiling, printed money, and paid all our bills. But that's not how reality works. But that's how the U.S. government works. And at some point in time, you know, the bill's going to have to be paid. And if you keep going in debt to the levels that we are, the bill's just going to become too big to pay. You know, it's one thing if you make $10,000 a month to have $3,000 in debt. You know, that's a lot, but we can sit there and go, I can envision how if I save a little bit of money each month, I can get rid of this $3,000 debt. It's another thing to have a $10,000 a month paycheck and have $120,000 in debt. Because there ain't any amount of calculations you can do to come up with a way to pay off that debt in a realistic fashion. And that's where the United States is. We're borrowing too much money. Our debt load is too big. And, you know, we don't have the means to pay for it.
So this is going to be a make-or-break thing for Biden, correct?
I believe so. I believe this is this will define his presidency, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, as this evolves, you and I will probably be talking a little bit more about this. So I'm Cynthia Pooler. You've been listening to All Access Closed. I've been talking to Scott Ritter. And thanks, Scott. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day. We'll talk soon. Thank you. Bye.